Welcome to the Heart of Healthcare podcast. In Series 3, we'll be talking about healthcare from a global perspective, offering deep discussions about what it will take for a system shift that will benefit patients and healthcare professionals when medicine is practiced from the heart. We'll be hearing from Stephanie Mo Davis, Drs. Ruby Shah, Dan Dinnenberg, and Diane Bonhoeffer as they share insights and wisdom from their personal experiences. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
So welcome today. We have another round, a beautiful discussion with Stephanie, Ruby, and Dan. And today we will dive into the question of what is suffering and what is the role of suffering and what does it look like from the different perspectives. To me, in many ways, I feel we have it upside down. We have it backwards in medicine. We try to avoid suffering. We are all about preventing suffering. And everybody sees value in this, and yet we're missing an opportunity. There is a role of suffering in our life, and we may embrace that role or disregard it. And one of the ways to look at this could be that treatment and cure have to do with ending suffering from a point of view of signs and symptoms. So I have pain because of a broken bone, and now I offer cure in terms of resetting the bones and painkillers, for example, and that solves the suffering point that is felt as pain. We may look at this differently and say that the actual healing process is something that we don't necessarily influence as classically trained doctors and nurses. We may enable the healing process by kind of starting it off as described just now. But one way to look at healing is that we're actually coming to terms with the current situation, with the present moment, with what is right now. And that's a completely different way of looking at it, provided that we understand coming to terms with, we don't understand this as acceptance and passive, you know, becoming a victim of, whoa, this is my situation, that's what life is like. But actually coming to terms with means an actual attention to what happens without the immediate knee-jerk reflection of, this is, I don't like this and I want to get rid of it. So is there an opportunity of a little space before jumping to that conclusion? And what happens in this space, can we explore it? I feel there's a large area where medicine can evolve, where we can add to something that happens actually at both sides of the bed or the desk. There is suffering in the patients, and that's kind of widely accepted. And there is suffering with the healthcare professionals, which is kind of not so accepted, because aren't we here to help others and relieve the suffering of others? Mm-hmm. So I leave it here just to start the conversation as a conversation starter and open it up. In let's take a first round and see, like, what is suffering for you and how do you see this? Ruby, do you want to get started?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for that. Really beautiful. I feel like it was more dimensional discussion of suffering. And you started off right by grabbing the bull right by the horns and saying, not, I think we have it wrong, but we have it wrong. I love that. I agree. And the reason is because I've experienced both from both sides of the bed, as the patient, and the provider, that, and I felt this way before I came to any kind of, let's say, developed understanding, that I could then articulate back to say to you, the rest of you today, and all the listeners, that I have learned from my experiences that there may be value in suffering. And how can I, as a physician, learn how to incorporate that into an embodied practice as a physician and in my work? Way before that, what I was seeing over and over again was this, I'll use the words that are instinctively coming up, this forced role upon the patient of not just victim, but like fighter. you must fight this, patient. get your armor on. If you don't fight, you're just giving up. It's very squeezing. It's very one dimensional. And I, even as a medical student or a resident, I used to feel like I had to go back, talk to the patient some more. And I felt like I needed to ease my own soul by having a little bit of a longer discussion with the patient, not because I was looking to learn anything or do anything specific to the patient. I just wanted to go back and talk to them more and get to know them more and say, listen, can you tell me a little bit more about your family? I just want to talk to you a little bit more. Do you have any questions about what the team said to you? This is where, when I first started to really feel that soul unease of, we really seem to be putting these patients into a, you know, specific role. And again, this is, understand that years later, and even at maybe months later, I'm doing the same exact thing. So I'm not vilifying. What I'm saying is trying to be as honest as possible, which is, I think that there's some level of stuckness that can happen to the sufferer, where there's only a few ways that you can respond to the role of sufferer from our perspective broadly in healthcare, which is either you put on your armor and you fight, or you succumb. You know, it seems like those seems to be this dichotomy and not much else to respond to. And I remember really struggling with that as a resident. And when I knew that I wanted to go into primary care, now I was in a very different situation. And I actually, it was a choice that made me feel empowered, because I felt like now I could be there for the whole story. I didn't need to just be there for this, you know, one scene of battle. I could be there for the whole story and get to know the bigger picture. And clearly, to some degree, try to have some control over it. Maybe that's definitely something that I was trying to experience and understand, but that's a whole other conversation. But that to me feels like a good place to start is this one-dimensional nature of suffering. It's something that I experienced, but it felt immediately kind of wrong. It wasn't until much later, I guess what I'm saying is, in having my own patient experiences, that I could start to really understand what was this really unease. I'm talking about decades of experience to arrive at a point where I can look back and really understand why I felt so uneasy from the get-go. That is a place to start.
Yeah, let's explore this a little bit more, why you felt so uneasy. Let's probably the going into the why, let's explore this a little bit more. But maybe as a first round, it might be good to hear from Dan, because as a holistic physician, I would be really interested to hear his point of view, that, you know, on what you've just touched on. You know, are we limited in the way that we look at this in our like classic Western medicine?
Thank you so much, Jan. It's an incredible conversation to unpack, because there's so much here. When Ruby was just speaking, she used a couple words that really resonate, and she kind of, you know, she used the battle and putting the armor on. And so all of this, I think for me, in my evolution in medicine as a holistic healer, is this understanding of all of my training was about the battle, about how do we overcome whatever that diagnosis is. And so in some ways, it's hard to take, you know, decades of study and put it into something. But in some ways, as I'm thinking about this, it is, you know, the pursuit, the intellectual pursuit of pattern recognition, and then understanding diagnosis, and then putting them into boxes, putting human beings into boxes, and then having an antidote or a antibiotic or an antiviral or an antifungal. And this is kind of fed through as if that is the way. And I think that everything that we speak to is, we've created a system, a curing system, a treatment system, and that is perpetuated. We can talk about this at length, but it's perpetuated by pharmaceuticals and an industry, and it kind of mimics sort of a other big industry, like a military complex industry. And so I think in its very nature, this is where we are, as sort of a training in something that is to overcome that. Now, what we're talking about now, and allowing kind of suffering into the equation, it's like, wow, we are suffering, patients are suffering, where is all this suffering coming from, and why are we wanting to avoid it if that is a part of humanity? And is there something to learn that? And I think that the next level sort of after defining that for myself, it's like, okay, well, in some ways, I think of my own relationship in medicine as the learning of giving and receiving as a human being and as a person within the relationship in medicine. And sort of like, you know, I realize that a lot of times when I'm in a patient encounter, I'm gaining. Mm-hmm. When I'm fully present and fully listening, I'm gaining insights. And when someone are in their most suffering mode, I'm very vulnerable and in a state, and I'm actually getting to, it's almost the strangest thing to say as an asset, but I'm learning what it is to struggle within that. And so because of that, I'm giving something of myself and I'm holding that, but I'm actually receiving something. And so there's a transmission, there's a certain resonance that's starting to happen. And I believe that is the basis of healing, of being seen, of witness, of understood and there. And it's a resonant field that can happen. And we're healing, and says, you kind of bring me into it as a holistic physician. Yeah, that's where healing can happen. And healing is holistic in its nature, where it's not just one-sided or a reductionist view of what we're trying to do. We're not trying to get them down to whatever that diagnosis is and cure that. It's ultimately seeing that healing happen. And I think, like all of us, as we mature, as we spend more time in the field, you start to see things and be with people or ourselves where you start to see it, where, you know, I had a dear friend go through what would be considered the most suffering you can imagine. It was just like the most intense cancer that was riddling her body. And it was just the most intense experience. And as I live through that, so to speak, as not as a physician, but as a friend, as someone watching that, I realized that through that whole experience, even in her death, she was becoming whole. That was her healing process that she was with. And so from every other aspect, from a conventional model, you'd have to say that what was happening, we were losing the battle and things were happening. And actually, it was evolving exactly how it was evolving for this person. And they were finally achieving this healing. And so that last part, and we can continue to unpack that and I'll stop there. But that last part is so important, because our fear of mortality, our fear of death itself, our fear of that as a finishing line makes us all even more, how are we going to fight this? Because it, the very nature of what we're talking about is that feels like loss. That feels like we have lost as physicians, as healthcare practitioners, and that should be on the table. Where are we? What are we really going to do? Because all of us die. That is the one, one thing that we all know is going to happen. And so it's really interesting to go into it with that as, oh, that's the worst case could ever happen. Mm-hmm. And so now we could start to unpack it.
Yeah, it's a failure, not just a loss. You know, there's heavy value, negative value.
Stephanie, how is this as a ground to walk on?
It's great. And I'd like to just add a couple of interesting things that came up listening to everybody speak so far from the patient perspective. And again, being in the depths of suffering for close to 10 years, and suffering takes on many forms. I think we have to acknowledge that. Is it pain? Is it agony? Is it grief? Is it internal suffering? Is it physical suffering? There's so many different elements and layers to suffering, and we need to learn to embody different perceptions of how people are perceiving their own suffering and what it's intended to potentiate within that person. One thing I find quite important is that the patient-doctor dynamic, this is a dynamic. This isn't a mistake. It's a divine encounter between two people. We could even call it a relationship, right? So I was watching something the other day about sacred relationships. And the gentleman, I can't think of his name offhand, but he was saying most people in comforting relationships, including marriage, aren't going to say the very thing that may destroy the marriage because they don't want to cause suffering. Mm-hmm. So they like to keep their friends and their certain partners at this space of support. And it really takes an interesting dynamic to what he called have a spiritual relationship, which is the person who is willing to hold you in this space without just taking away or easing your pain or providing you what you want to hear so you don't have to look at yourself. So I think that there's this beautiful potential within evolving the doctor-patient relationship is to first understand that this is a sacred relationship. How can I best be of service? And again, it requires us to broaden our perception of what's possible by realizing, by taking away their pain first. What happens when we take pain meds or antidepressants or even drugs for transplantation? The veil gets thicker to see. We don't have the same ability to see clearly. So I think it's exceptionally important moving forward that recognizing from the practitioner point of view of this is an opportunity. The other thing is hearing all of this battle talk feels to me again like a well-taught method to fight for someone's life, which feels very warrior-esque. It feels very masculine. Where is the feminine principle in healing? And as a patient who's undergone multiple organ transplants, the last thing that I have energy to do when I'm on my deathbed is fight. Mm-hmm. I don't have any energy to fight. So it's very, very important to recognize why the fight exists. And if somebody, it has to be a nuance of if somebody is giving up prematurely, how can I encourage them to stay in it? The word fight, I believe, should be completely eliminated from medical vocabulary. Whenever I hear somebody say, F this, fight this, I'm thinking to myself, why are we wasting all of this unneeded energy? There's a way with less effort and more grace that actually I think can provide, if not better or as good results. It's really depending on who you're speaking to. So for me as a patient, if I'm going to channel those moments when I was in my deepest suffering where the autoimmune, the lupus, I don't take drugs, but morphine would not even reduce the pain. There was nothing that could take away my suffering. Nothing. I had no choice. Something was going on between me and my higher self or the God of my own understanding that there was going to be nothing that was going to reduce what I needed to just surrender to be in, to sit in, to pray, to eliminate all of the fear and the fight. And what can I do to fix this? Was to just be stripped of everything and to recognize the beauty and substance of the connection that you can feel even when you're suffering. It might not be the best connection, but you're still not alone if you have faith. If you have faith, you're not alone. And I think this is one of the biggest components of suffering is suffering keeps us disconnected and it keeps you in a state of disconnect from your true self. That's to me what the essence of suffering is. It's I'm disconnected from something within me that wants to come out and I can't see it. I can't see it. So can you help me? And then we look for people to fill those voids of where that suffering is. And I think it has to be a more delicate balance between truly understanding the three-dimensional superficial layer of how do I make you comfortable? How can I make you comfortable without contributing to encourage you to not also do your own work and look in the mirror? One of the most profound lessons in my personal suffering has been the ability to, again, suffering was calling me to be still, to surrender, not to fight, the complete opposite. To surrender. And when people would tell me to fight and tell me things to do, it actually caused me more suffering. So for me, I needed to surrender. I needed to listen. I needed to establish my connection with the God of my own understanding if this was going to be my last days. I needed to face my own death. That's what I needed to do. I needed to get comfortable with all that was and everything about me. And then what happened was, as I started to give over the control of like, I'm the driver of my life and nobody else can come in and help me out, divine or not. As I started to give over that control, I started to feel a little better, which catalyzed the potential in reconnecting in my life and what I was going to do when I had the strength to reconnect again.
Wow. You talk about the connection, talk about the healing power of connection. What is this connection that you talk about? Who is connecting with whom? You said before, let me link this to something you said before beautifully. You said, how can I be of service? So this could be, if the physician says this to the patient, that's what we expect. If the patient says this to the physician, that will trigger a startling. What if the patient says this to the patient? Is this the kind of connection you're talking about?
I would like to say that my illness and the suffering catalyzed helped me to remember my purpose. Who I am today is different than the person that I was before my illness, even though I thought that was why I was here. So I feel as though this connection that you're speaking of was the potential in the stopping, the suffering, the years of self-reflecting with nobody, being alone and isolated, helped me to give over my control, authority to how I thought my life should be into what am I here to do that's beyond me? What maybe am I forgetting that I'm supposed to be doing? I would love to see the medical field approach illness as a potential. We're on a journey together, you and I. We're going to be vulnerable. We're going to communicate as two equal partners here. This is a sacred relationship, a doctor and a patient. We're on a journey. And the worst case scenario is that you take your next journey. But we're going to be on this together, and you're going to keep all of the space open for the divinity to flow through the connection, not pinch or constrict any potentials by certain languaging and hierarchical kind of ways that we're taught to practice medicine.
Dan, do you want to add to this?
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Stephanie, thank you so much for sharing that, because I start to look right now as I've evolved even in my practice, and the wording is so much about co-creation, about how do we co-create. You know, I call myself a physician guide, and all of these kind of well thought out ways of evening the playing field, so to speak, and kind of putting us together and allowing curiosity to lead. And with that, it's really interesting, but that for me has been a little bit of what then allows the training to possibly be foundation, but that all of this is new, uncharted territory. And so it's like, oh, well, if I'm getting curious, it's almost like my own mindfulness practice or my own meditation or my own adventures or experiences. I don't know what's going to happen. And when you are not knowing and you're fully present and you're in relationship, I think that's what Stephanie is considering and calling a sacred relationship, because you are then showing up in a way without preconceived notions, without what things are supposed to be. You could still hold intention in that. So I think you could still have an intention of an outcome, but you're losing the expectations and you're losing the way it should look. And now it can go any which way. And I think that that dimensionality is something that is incredible. And so, Jan, as you're saying, like, you know, the patient asking the patient, how can I be of service, or whatever that is, to put us outside the normal role, the normal box of how we do things, that is the change. And so I think that that is what, you know, all of us on this conversation is inviting into medicine. It's like, we know we're at a point where it needs to shift. It needs to transform. And instead of it having to, what's exciting right now as we're talking is, instead of it having to look completely different, we don't know how it has to look. And so I think when we are kind of on this call, it's like, look, we don't know how it's looked, but like, hey, let's get curious when we come at that same idea or thought from our hearts. What is that bringing into the equation, and how do we relate? How do we connect? What do we do in a different place? And so now it's, I guess I become very optimistic, because from a heady point of view, I start thinking a systems thinker. And so I started thinking how healthcare needs to change and pivot to be, and what it would look like. And so then I start tripping into all of that, and it becomes this, like, as if I know. Now I have my own spirituality and faith that would be, I don't need to know how it's going to look when I get curious and when I'm in heart space. And so if all we do is honor the sacred relationship and enter into medicine in that field, we don't need to know how it looked, because it already has transformed. And that's what's super exciting and optimistic about the future of medicine from a way that we're speaking of now.
Amazing. we have enough light for the next step. That's all we need. So this is something that bugs me for a while now, is that if research is the basis of what we call our medicine today, saying science, the evidence that we're generating in the process of science as we define it, is the evidence that we use for healing. That's where we learn, and this is what we know. The fundamental asset of a researcher is curiosity. If you know as a researcher, you're not going to get anywhere. So it's the state of not knowing that intrigues the researcher to pursue the work. So with a PhD hat on, if you like, you're not knowing, and you're enjoying the not knowing. As a clinician, when somebody's screaming of pain in front of you, that doesn't really trigger the idea of, oh, I wonder what that might be. You know, let's create a research project around this. Right. So then it's about, we've got to do something here, right? We've got to alleviate. So there's an immediate jump to, we need to fix something. So we go into knowing mode, and there's a shared thing here where the patient knows, kind of shows up as a knower. I want to get rid of this. I don't like this. I don't want this. And the doctor shows up, or the nurse, or whoever is the healthcare professional shows up and says, well, I have a way to fix it. I know how to fix this. Mm-hmm. Or at least I know how to try to fix it. So this is where two knowers meet. While actually what Stephanie was just outlining from a patient perspective, what you're really looking for is somebody who's open and curious to meet on uncharted ground eye to eye. And what, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like that's beautiful. I love this description, but I want to say something about this experience because I want to honor, let's bring the warrior back in just for a second. Right? The researcher warrior. Whoa, this guy. Right? This is power. This is there's a lot of centuries of knowledge and power and know-how and getting stuff done. So this is a useful guy mm-hmm. in the lurch when you're mm-hmm. screaming in pain, when you need to, you know, blood is splurting everywhere, when things are down the line, it's an emergency. This is a wonderful, wonderful aspect of yourself, energy, power, person, whatever you want to call it. Freedom within the system. We could even talk about that. Do we still need to be able to access this? Absolutely. And as personally in my own life, it's been important for me to continue to honor and access this aspect of myself. The in the moment, like I'm your guy, girl, you know, I can get it done. This is a very useful thing to have. We don't want to completely devalue. I think this, to me, I feel like this, what feels like a way to move forward into the system is that you don't actually leave this behind. What we do is we find a way for them to not just value maybe where it's at, valuing both of them, but also being able to switch back and forth or coexist. And one person leads, maybe not even leading, but maybe they're switching back and forth in how they're doing things. To me, in my personal life and my practice, this is where I'm at now, is really finding this balance, this dance, this flow of both. Because again, this is not, you know, evidence-based. The reason evidence-based is to me and you, yeah. And like, wait a minute, you know, like let's not forget everything else. If we're just only based in one thing, however, if we're keeping the evidence equally next to the heart, okay, now it's feeling more so what feels right to me and doesn't insult my soul, you know, which has again, these feelings we've had, I think, for a long time from the get-go in practice. So this concept of not leaving the warrior researcher mindset behind.
I totally love the research. I totally love the warrior part. And it has the place. It has a place. And yet it's not the only tool we should have in our toolbox. Like exactly. If healing turns into emergency mode on all levels and undoing and fixing mode on all levels, that doesn't really work. I think we know this from relations, right? We know this, the classic, Stephanie, you talked about male-female principle, yeah? The war against cancer, we needed to fight this. This is very masculine conceptualization of health and healing. Mm-hmm. Probably the worst thing that I learned I can do when my wife talks to me and shares something that is bothering her or that she has experienced, and I feel I have a solution to contribute, I know how to alleviate her suffering. That's a really, really bad idea. Yes. So usually that has repercussions. So it's much better to actually just be there as a first meeting, just be there, mm-hmm. and actually be and acknowledge that there is a suffering or there is an experience, and just let that be that experience without having. And there's magic that happens in this, because then she feels heard. Mm-hmm. I step out of my pattern that actually creates an openness. Mm-hmm. And usually the solution that is right for her was not what I had in mind. It may also work, but it was kind of a preconceived pre-something and is actually not what was really her journey to feeling better.
Yeah. Yeah. And that reminds me of what Dan was saying earlier, of this relationship that leaves open room for possibility.
So I think one thing that's come up here that's really interesting is that part of what we're dealing with as a healthcare system is the success. And I think it'll come from in a very small percentage of the time is what I'm kind of hearing and kind of, you know, reiterating here is like, let's say in an emergency setting, you know, the airway, breathing, circulations, the trauma, that it's incredible and it works really well.
Right.
You know, in a surgery, this is possibly the way through. But if you're talking about what we're dealing with right now, with, let's just even say 80% of chronic, 80% of conditions are chronic. There's so much more dynamic to even what we're knowing, and we're just extrapolating that into everything else. And so it's very similar to what I see kind of bringing us back to this idea of, you know, fighting and going through, which comes from an antibiotic era where we did have some success, right? We had people dying and we're like, oh, hey, we figured out there's a germ theory and here's an antibiotic that works for that. Then you have people with a viral upper respiratory infection that were like, oh, here's your ZPAC and here's your this and here's your that, because we just are like, oh, we had a success and it might be successful 10% of the time. Now, 90% of the time, we have to be in a different mode. We have to be in a healing mode and not a curing mode. And we have to figure out who the patient is, who we are within this relationship, and how to bring that here. And so I think in the same way, Ruby, that you kind of, I love that you brought in, hey, we can't, you know, they always say the term like throw the baby out with the mouthwater, but you know, I never liked that. I can't believe I just repeated it. But it was this idea of like holding the evidence with the heart together, but also understanding where is that relationship and how much of each, right? And that's where it is. And so bringing that into like back to the idea of suffering, wow, where does that come into the equation? And where maybe this is a part of it that we're, you know, the healthcare part that we know and we're good at. And it comes from, oh, because this is something that we can memorize and we can do over and over. And it might work for a majority of people, but everything else is bespoke precision. Everyone is different. And that's a totally different aspect. And that's what's harder to train and harder to be with and harder to have someone that can actually meet another human being, because you need humanity. You need your own development in order to get there.
Beautiful.
What a firework. Stephanie.
Dan, I love what you were saying regarding knowing your balance in your energy. And this is something I'm delighted about, because I'm very passionate about understanding what true sacred masculine and true healthy feminine energy is. And I think this is something that we're all learning within ourselves at this time in history regarding relationship. And one thing that I'd like to say, how this can influence medicine. First, the work has to be done within. You have to start to, as a practitioner, understand where am I out of balance? Because if we want to talk about sacred feminine energy, codependency or relying on someone to help you doesn't fit the bill. If we're looking at the warrior energy, well, then we need to look into, are you starting to control things? Are you starting to dominate? Where is your true balance with your fight or flight warrior energy and masculinity in the system? And where is your true feminine balance? Maybe as a patient of, I'm not going to let this individual or the people helping me disempower me I'm not going to rely on them. I'm not going to become codependent. So there has to be more nuance when we talk about what the potential of understanding this energy could be in medicine when it's in its healthiest state.
Wow. So this is a firework here that we're creating again. It's fantastic. Let me just take a step back here. As we're coming to the end of our time today, in our last conversation, we're talking about where did we come from? Like, how did our journey start as physicians, as patients? And today we talked about suffering and different elements of suffering. And may we give suffering actually a place at the table rather than as the enemy that needs to be fought. And how might this change the paradigm in how we treat, how we conceptualize health, and how we actually interact with each other? And are there other ways of meeting? And are there other ways of a therapeutic alliance that allows suffering to be part of the journey rather than as the target? So we also recognize that we are fairly heavily conditioned into our respective roles, and that leads to suffering as we have an idea of what life should be like. And one of the things we established about suffering was that it's somehow the difference between what is and what we want it to be. And that's a major driver of suffering. And so if we want to alleviate suffering as a mantra as healthcare professionals, then one of the things we may want to address is this, which typically we don't do unless we're called psychologist or psychiatrist. And so This is something that we may actually take up more widely. And we also recognize that it starts with ourselves. So we said that's where the journey starts. That's where the perspective originates, and that's where the relation evolves from. And then from everybody who's engaged. So this is a really good preparation for our next conversation that we had in mind, and that was to look at giving permission to our compassionate self. So actually kind of stepping out of the knowing mode and the warrior mode, and recognize that we're really good at this, like we're world champions in all of this domain, right? But maybe there's another thing that the world champions may adopt to show up as an even better version of themselves. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation next time when we look at, when we explore, how can we give ourselves permission to add to ourselves? So thanks a lot for joining today. That was an amazing conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this Heart of Healthcare podcast brought to you by Heart-Based Medicine. If you enjoyed the conversation, you'll find some free resources and more information at heartbasedmedicine.org. Please share this episode if you feel inclined and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Until next time, thanks and take care.